True Blue A podcast. It's been 2 weeks, Eric Steven. You and I are talking again, though.
We are. Much, we're a pretty strong duo, I would say. So almost as good as Rob Bass and DJ Easy Rock, who recorded It Takes Two. And we are also taking two today.
We took two because kind of the period between you, there's that first like couple of weeks after the World Series where there's a lot of kind of going on stuff to talk about, and then there's the winter meetings which are coming up, and then there's a lot of air, usually not a lot of happening. We thought that might be one of the weeks, and we were right. Actual major news in the last 2 weeks happened just a few hours ago, so we're ready to talk about that. A lot of small transactional stuff happened in the last 2 weeks. We'll talk about that. And then you and I are going to talk a little bit about the winter meetings, some trade rumors, some good stuff like that.
Absolutely. I think, we were correct in assuming that nothing was going to happen over the Thanksgiving week. And for outside of procedural stuff, nothing really did. So once again, adding to our unblemished record of predictions throughout this podcast history.
Yeah, we've never been wrong.
Ever.
Yasiel Puig agrees.
Mm-hmm.
Anywho, moving on. So let's talk about Dave Roberts. You and I were expecting basically the news that came out today that he signed. It was announced as a new deal, right? As opposed to a three-year extension. So probably getting a little bit of a raise in there. So including this upcoming season, it's through the 2022 season. I don't think, last I looked, financial terms weren't disclosed.
They usually
aren't. Now and then it gets leaked. Now and then doesn't. Doesn't really matter in terms of the fan because it doesn't affect anything payroll-wise. So Dave Roberts back 4 years. It was interesting. I checked the comments on both MLB trade rumors of this occurring, and I checked the comments on the baseball subreddit. Baseball subreddit, very, I would dare I say, level-headed. He's been to the World Series twice. MLB trade rumors, it was nonstop. Oh, thanks, Dodgers. Signed every other team in baseball.
Right.
It's just like, every other team really very not envious of what the Dodgers have done, you know, outside of the Astros and outside of the Red Sox.
Yeah, I'm beginning to think, like, it's so weird. Like, sports fandom is so odd. Like,
dumb?
You know, it's kind of dumb. Like, you know, you look at it and, like, there's literally like 28 other teams who would have killed for a chance to get to the World Series. And it's like, it's like losing the World Series negates getting there somehow. The Dodgers are the new Buffalo Bills. It's like, yeah, sure. But like, let's take a step back for a second. Like, the Bills did not win a Super Bowl. They got to four straight though. And like that in itself is an accomplishment. And I'm obviously the ultimate accomplishment is winning, but like, the fact that that's like thought of as like they're thought of as like some joke franchise because of that, like, is
I think it's fair like to argue, laughable. And I do this as a fan of many, many teams that are really, really good at making the playoffs and very, very poor at winning them. Mm-hmm. That I think it is a more painful existence to root for the Buffalo Bills than the Cleveland Browns, but I wouldn't say it is a better experience. I think it is fun to watch your team do well in most of the games and series they play. So I think NBA fans get this better, understand this a little bit better than baseball fans, just because there's, for whatever reason, not been a lot of parity in the NBA in certain areas. We have the Warriors era now and LeBron era now. We had the Michael Jordan era. For whatever reason, whenever I've looked at basketball fans, maybe outside of you Laker fans, which I've avoided, there's been less of a championship or nothing mentality, which I think is healthy, and I encourage our listeners who aren't a part of that to kind of enjoy the small moments and the very, very big victories.
I'm kind of there as a basketball fan. I'll just as an aside, you know, look, I grew up, my first like Laker team that I watched was like the 86-87 team, which had Magic Johnson. It was showtime in full effect. So like, kind of spoiled in that regard. And like, and you know, it was, I, I'm, you know, championship or bust is probably the mentality I had for a while. But I will say this, in 2009, when the Lakers won the first time post Shaq that they won, they beat Orlando in the finals. I didn't feel anything when they won. Like, it was like, oh, okay. Like, isn't this supposed to be like some sort of accomplishment or something? And then, but then I will say this, the next year when they beat the Celtics, that rekindled a lot. Because it was the Celtics, and like I literally did a Toyota jump for joy at the end of the game, you know, game seven. So like it's weird how it brings you back like that. But yeah, so like you sort of do appreciate. There's a lot of things like because it's super depressing. The flip side of that, because if that's your mentality, then what the hell are you doing? Like, mm-hmm. what are you wasting all of your time like? Following this, spending hours and hours of every week, every day, like following this, if your only reward is winning a championship, something that doesn't happen often at all, so that's what you're subjecting yourself to. Like you have to find like reasons to keep going along the way. Otherwise, it's like, what's the point? Not to get macabre, but yeah. So yeah, I mean,
the Dave Roberts era has produced more painful moments than any other era, but way, way, way more happier moments than the Grady Little, Don Mattingly, Jim Tracy eras combined.
Right, and then look, the Dodgers lost two World Series under Dave Roberts. Well, guess how many they got to the previous 28 years?
The last time they did it was Lasorda.
Right.
And I'm not sure we would be praising Lasorda in this day and age.
Yeah, that's another thing. And so Roberts, look, he's 3 years in. They have the best record in the National League under him. I think second best to Houston, I think, overall in the majors in that time. They won two pennants with Dave Roberts. He's 3 years in. He signed a four-year extension. You mentioned they did pick up his option only because there was like a deadline to do so. And like all along, you have to give sort of the benefit of the doubt here. Both sides have been saying, look, we think this is going to happen. We just have to wait. Like Dodgers dealt with Kershaw and to a lesser extent, David Freese at the end of the season. Then they lost Farhan Zaidi. So they've sort of been dealing with a lot of stuff, you know, busy off season. And then they coaching staffs, a lot of guys left. So Roberts was kind of a back burner issue, but knowing that like they weren't going to lose him made it like less of the squeaky wheel. But they always said like, look, this is going to happen. We're confident that it's going to get something done eventually, and they did. So now they have a 4-year extension. But his extension or his option pickup was $1.1 million for next year. Roberts is in like the lower third, or he was in 2018, of managers' salaries. So. Given the rumors, we haven't seen any of the financial numbers yet, but given like the rumors, I guess AJ Hinch signed like a 4-year, $12 million extension with the Astros, but he won the World Series. Yes. So when he did that, so I would imagine Roberts is going to be in that neighborhood. So that's sort of what, but like, it's something that like had to be done. Like, Roberts' success is not common. Like it's not, you know, look, oh, sure, he had the players and all that, but, like, you sort of, you mentioned Jim Tracy, and they had, like, a toxic relationship with him and Paul DePodesta, and like, there's a lot of fault on both sides in that. But if you find a combination, like, you could, you know, the critics of Roberts say he's a puppet for the front office. I don't think that's the case. You know, he's certainly he's, like, along for the ride, and he goes along with their plan or whatever it is. Anytime you can get a kind of relationship like that, that's actually like collaborative and not like at each other's throats the entire year, like that's something to like hold on to and cherish. So like that's worth it in itself, even if it's like necessarily a philosophy you don't agree in. Just from an organizational standpoint, it's strong because everyone's on the same page, and that seems to be what it is. Like, so I think in that regard, it's good, and Roberts definitely deserved this. But, you know, like we've talked about this before. I wrote about it earlier. Roberts, when he was hired, there were four managers hired that offseason. One was Don Mattingly, who went from the Dodgers to the Marlins, not an inexperienced manager. The other two were Scott Servais and Andy Green. They did not have managerial experience, just like Roberts, and both got extensions this year before Roberts did. So, like, and they haven't won a damn thing. And so, like, Roberts clearly deserved this extension just from relative to, like, his profession. And so it was right that the Dodgers did this, and they finally got it done. And so, you know, they sort of get when we talked about, like, look, they had to get this done, they did. And so good on them.
Some other more minor changes in the coaching staff occurred. I don't have a lot. You mentioned it. A lot occurred. I don't have the full list in front of me. Do you?
Yeah. So the Dodgers did announce last week as well. They're like, they finalized the coaching staff. You know, a lot of it's guys returning, like Rick Honeycutt is the main one. He's been there forever. As the pitching coach, Mark Pryor's back. As bullpen coach, they lost Chris Woodward was the main problem. Chris Woodward and Turner Ward, like everyone who left was kind of like left on a promotion, basically, like, in some, except for Turner Ward, who basically took the same position with the Reds, but like he's like closer to his wife, who's dealing with health issues, so that was like that played into that a little bit. So like but yeah, Chris Woodward managing the Rangers. So Dino Ebel is the new third base coach, taking over for him. He was with the Angels recently, but he's actually was a coach in the minor league system for like 15 years, I think. Wow. Including his time as a player, it was like 17 years, dating back to like 88. So he was in the Dodgers minors a long time, like in various different roles. So he's back, but on the major league staff. Then, you know, with Turner Ward leaving, so they, like, Dodgers last year had like these, they had two assistant hitting coaches who kind of split time between the major league staff and then like coordinating with minor league hitters. It was Brant Brown and Luis Ortiz. Ortiz went to join Woodward's staff in Texas. So Brant Brown is like, I think he is the, actually, I'll look it up. Because I had it in front of me, the list. But, yeah, so Brant Brown is the hitting strategist now, which, you know, it's all kind of under the same umbrella. He's basically like the assistant hitting coach or just helping. But so the guy that the Dodgers brought in was a gentleman named Robert Van Scoyoc. It's S-C-O-Y-O-C. I don't know exactly how to pronounce that last name. But what he is kind of a unique guy in that he was not a like traditional coach. He was like a hitting consultant that a lot of players use. Like, for instance, Chris Taylor went to him when he sort of remodeled his swing, and, you know, proof's in the pudding there in that he turned himself into a major leaguer, basically. After, you know, it's not like Ben Swag didn't create Chris Taylor, but he helped. JD Martinez, he was released by the Astros like 5 or 6 years ago. And then he went to Detroit and sort of remade his career. And he worked with Van Scoyoc, and he swears by him. So he was like an independent, like, hitting consultant, like someone guys would go to, like, either in the off season or, you know, just to bounce ideas off of, things like that. So he worked with the Diamondbacks, hired him last year as sort of their, he was hitting strategist with them last year, and he would like literally like break down swings and offer suggestions, things like that. But yeah, so he's a hitting coach with the Dodgers now. So that's new. George Lombard's back. Bob Guerin is the bench coach. He's back. He's been with Roberts every year so far in LA. Another assistant hitting coach is Aaron Bates, who a former player. And then he's been in the Dodgers minor league system the last like 5 years, sort of bouncing around. So that's, he got a promotion. And then the other sort of noteworthy addition was, it's kind of funny, Chris Jimenez, I can't remember if he's a hard G or soft G, it's Jimenez or Jimenez, I'm not sure, but he was like a major league catcher the last like 10 years. He literally was playing in 2018, and but he also like weirdly he's pitched a lot of like mop-up games, a lot like he pitched in like he has 11 career games pitched, including 10 in the last 3 years. So like he was like the go-to guy for mop-up pitching. So like, look, I'm not saying we saw Kike pitch last year, but let's say the Dodgers need to emergency activate someone, he's still there. But yeah, so but the best part about Jimenez is that I don't think he announced his retirement, from as a player, but like someone just like a week before the week of Thanksgiving, someone just sent him a tweet that said, Jimenez, you suck at baseball, bro. And Jimenez quote tweeted it with correction, I did suck at baseball. And like nobody saw it at the time or like thought much of it. So, but that actually turned out to like signify his retirement. So that's one of the cooler retirement announcements you'll ever see. So yeah, that's basically the coaching staff. It's hard to know much about these guys, honestly. Vance Koyuk is the most interesting just because he has the different backstory. So that'll be exciting, and it'll be interesting to see sort of how he works with guys, next season.
Looking ahead to the winter meetings, Dodgers had to add some minor league players to the 40-man to avoid some Rule 5 shenanigans. So we have a list of 5 new prospects on the 40-man. Is that right?
Yeah. And so, we talked about this, like K-Bear Ruiz was going to be the obvious one.
Right.
And after that, it was like, they could add some guys. They might not. It's always like, who do they add? Because is a team really going to stash this guy on a major league roster the whole year and risk it? Some pitchers are maybe more likely. You can stash someone in the bullpen, but hitters less likely, but you never know, like some of these guys. But yeah, but they actually added like 4 more guys, which was a lot. But it was like the sort of the guys you kind of expect, like Yadier Alvarez, been like up and down as a prospect, not really a top prospect anymore, but still has like a lively arm. Don't know if he's going to be a starter or reliever, but still has the live arm, and he's still young, really. Edwin Rios, Matt Beaty, the hitters, and then Josh Spores, sort of an underrated reliever, probably. He was the most outstanding player in the College World Series with Virginia in 2015. Dodgers got him in the second round. It was the same. They played Vanderbilt in the finals, and that was Walker Buehler's team. So that was the same draft. So it'll be interesting to see. I think Spores probably at some point will, pitch in the bullpen. We've seen how aggressive the Dodgers are in calling guys up. Those are interesting. But, like, to make room, the Dodgers only had with Ryu accepting the qualifying offer, they were already at like 39 players. So they had to clear 4 spots. And it was we talked about this before where the Dodgers had a load of like pitchers who were out of options and ARB eligible and who probably weren't going to see a long time on the 40-man roster. And so they basically like cleaned house. Tom Kohler coming back from shoulder injury, ARB eligible, gone. Eric Gaedel, also coming back from injury, gone. And Zach Roscup, lefty, out of options, gone. And then they traded Tim LoCastro to the Yankees to clear up a spot. And eventually they also did the same. Pat Venditti was not out of options, but sort of on the fringes there. They designated him and made him a free agent last week as well.
And I'm kind of shocked this wasn't our lead story. The Dodgers did make a trade.
Yes.
Before the winter meetings. And I had to ask you who he was.
So they traded for a guy who was actually from out here. He went to Bonita High School in Laverne and Azusa Pacific in Azusa, which is actually pretty near where my apartment is, actually. But yeah, he's a left-hander, Adam McCreary. He pitched in the minors, lively arm, walks a lot, your sort of typical like reliever lottery guy. Decent amount of strikeouts, but also walked last year in, looks like, 71 strikeouts in 55 innings, but also 37 walks in the minors. So, hit or miss type of guy, but he's on the 40-man. He actually made his major league debut last year. He pitched an inning, gave up 2 runs on 4 hits, but he also struck out too. So like, who knows, right? But that's he has the one thing I noticed that I sort of like on his Twitter account. he lists in his as his bio wrong hander instead of left hander. So I kind of like that, except that he hasn't updated it because it still says Atlanta Braves organization. So yeah, it was. That was like a trade for cash, I believe, cash considerations. That was the move that they they had to, they got rid of Pat Venditti to put Adam McCreary on. So yeah, those are all kind of cleaning house at the bottom of the 40 man a little bit. Yeah, so that's kind of where we're at.
The other thing you and I talked about 2 weeks ago that we kind of, as an item to look forward to kind of before the winter meetings, was non-tender candidates for the Dodgers. And after that house was cleared, they all got them.
Right. Yeah, like no one got non-tendered after those other guys were dropped. Tony Cingrani actually got they worked out a deal. He's ARB eligible, or was. And he signed for 1 year, $2.65 million. MLB Trade Rumors had estimated his arbitration at $2.7 million, so they were way off.
We talked about this last year. When was the last time the Dodgers actually went through arbitration?
It still has been it was Joe Bimel in 2007.
Was
I believe.
Kim Ng handling those negotiations?
Yes, and guess
let's
what?
Let's say there was something they were way more willing to do when they had her in the front office.
Kim Ng won.
Yeah,
because Kim Ng always wins. So, yeah, and so they haven't gone through arbitration since then.
I hope she gets a GM job.
She deserves like
she
definitely
to
like,
a bunch of Dodger Thoughts commentators, including you and me. And it's still one of the highlights of my baseball fan career. I just remember really liking what she talked about.
That was a Dodger Thoughts outing, and we got sort of behind the scenes. So besides Tommy Lasorda we were making Simpsons jokes when he was talking. I do remember the Kim Ng thing a lot, and I just remember too. One of the questions was, "What's the best pitch in baseball?" And she said, "Strike one."
Yep,
that was so good.
Still, when evaluating how is a pitcher doing, that's like because of that talk. It's what I'm always looking at. How often are they getting that first strike over?
That struck me too. It was really cool, and no, it was great. So, her name's brought up a lot of times. It's like almost as a prop because you hope she would get a fair shot at some point, and maybe I don't know if that's going to happen, but like who knows. But that was the last time the Dodgers went to arbitration. So
you imagine similar to Cingrani, a lot of other things we're going to get, a lot of contracts will get worked out. When is arbitration?
I don't have the actual date in front of me, but it's January. It's like mid January, like the 15th ish.
Plenty of time.
So yeah, that's when the exchange is, and then it's not. It's a soft deadline in that teams can still negotiate after that. The Dodgers have been notoriously what they call a file and trial team. So if it gets to that point where the two teams haven't agreed and they actually exchange numbers, then I think the Dodgers cut it off at that point. A lot of teams do this. And the reason is for a long time, I think agents and teams alike sort of, you sort of use that. They didn't treat that as a hard deadline, and it sort of bogged down negotiations because they would just make outlandish like asks, knowing that they'd eventually get to somewhere in the middle. But with this, it sort of expedites the process a little bit, that teams and agents both like get down to the nitty gritty faster. Like they make actual offers. and it gets to the, whatever the number is. And I think the teams, they analyze the both sides, they analyze it so intently. They have a pretty good idea of what the number is going to be roughly. And they just have to argue on $1 to either side of it, the midpoint. So to win their way. So if they strategize and get to a number they think they can win, they're not going to let it, they're just going to, use that as a deadline. So it's worked in that they've signed everyone so far. Arbitration hearings, like the process itself, it seems needlessly corrosive to me in that, it's a player who's not a free agent, and it's a player you, in theory, still want, and you still have a relationship
to say
why
with. You don't want him.
and you're like, or but you're like the entire process is you're basically the team. By nature of the process is trying to say, here's why this guy isn't very good. So we shouldn't have to pay him X amount of dollars. And then your entire case is built on saying, this player isn't that good. And the player, sometimes they're in there, sometimes they're not. But just that hearing that has got to be, like, ridiculous. Like, it's not good. And so, yeah, so it's good that they avoid the hearings whenever possible. And the Dodgers have done that for, like, a dozen years, so.
And with that, Dodgers have kind of taken care of most of the bookkeeping that you and I talked about heading into the winter meetings. Leading both, it was something you thought maybe it was such a dire need that maybe they would take care of it quickly, but it certainly is going to be the sort of the lead need going to the winter meetings, is the Dodgers don't really have a catcher.
Right. But, the only sort of As Andrew Friedman put it, the only HR thing they still technically don't have a GM.
Whatever.
So, but that'll come eventually. But yeah, you're right. Catcher is the glaring sore thumb need of the team. So, like, yeah, that's sort of that has to be sort of the focus, I think, going into the winter meetings. So yeah, exactly.
And I know you wanted to bring up one of the names that had kind of been rumored as a solution to that is no longer an option for the Dodgers.
Right. So, we've heard a lot of, you know, rumors. Like, everyone talks about, like, JT Realmuto as a trade guy, or some of the free agents out there. You know, Yasmani Grandal, obviously a free agent. I don't think the Dodgers are going to re-sign him just because he's going to get a multi-year deal somewhere. They need more of a stopgap guy, if they're doing that. But anyway, one of the free agent or one of the trade targets was Yan Gomes of the Indians, but he was just traded to the Nationals, so he's off the market. So that, like, sort of eliminates one possibility, but it does bring up an interesting point, because the Indians, like, who are perennially the best team in the AL Central, like, are weirdly, like, cutting costs right now. So, like, is it a tie? Like, I don't know if they're, I mean, I think they're still planning to, like, compete. So
are
it's
they?
Very
odd. Or do
yeah.
you want to move to Miami? Be a second
Ooh,
team?
Wait a minute. Is this a major league scenario? Is that what you're proposing?
I may be suggesting that.
Wow. So anything that leads to someone actually running the final play of Major League, I'm for. So, like, if it gets to, if they have to do a spring training shenanigans where they invite Willie Mays Hayes to Goodyear next year, I'm in. I am all in.
One of the interesting things you brought up, the Indian trade rumors, was that kind of the frontliner for a lot of the rumors going on with the Dodgers in terms of trade are seeking starting pitching, which I found sort of interesting considering the Dodgers' depth at starting pitching is sort of a strength that they've relied on, being able to go to a six-man rotation, being able to give guys a lot of rest. Does this surprise you? Obviously, they're just rumors, so we don't know how valid they are, but it seemed to be fairly credible that they were, you know, kicking the tires on getting one more sort of, like, number one, number two level starting pitcher.
Yeah, I think it tracks for me in that they do have a lot of depth, but I think anytime they could try to swing big and try to get someone who slots in at the top, near the top of the rotation, like, it just sort of, it helps everything out. Like, either it moves everyone down a peg and it even creates more depth, or it consolidates a little bit. And so they, you know, trying to sort of have the best possible, you know, 25 man or whatever, or like starting staff, that kind of a thing. So I think it's a real thing. Like, actually, Ken Rosenthal at The Athletic wrote about that this morning, a little bit about the Dodgers, more of in passing. But, you know, he kind of mentioned this, like, they're thinking about, like, swinging big, or they should at the winter meetings, because, like, they have, like, all these starting pitchers, and they have, like, all these outfielders, but it's, you know, they should consider, like, packaging some of them to get, like, even higher-end talent at the top, that kind of a thing. So it kind of makes sense in some level. And especially if, like, some of these guys are available. Like, the Indians, we mentioned, like, their big strength was starting pitching, or one of them. And they're talking about, they have, like, Corey Kluber, Carlos Carrasco, Trevor Bauer, and they, like, I always forget if it's Steve or Mike Clevenger. It's one of the two. Anyway, but Carrasco is on, like, a team-friendly deal. He's less likely to be traded. Like, I guess they're trying to cut costs. Corey Kluber, I think, also like a very under market deal. He's like a perennial Cy Young contender. Also has a lot of mileage on the arm, if we're talking about that. So his name is in the rumors a lot, but also pretty good deal. Trevor Bauer is the, if you're talking about like ownership being conservative, just generally, the one thing they want is cost certainty. And Trevor Bauer is like a very good, like he pitched like at a Cy Young level this year. He just got hurt at the wrong time, like, and didn't finish his year. He was hurt down the stretch. But like he has two RBIs left. So the cost certainty isn't there. And next year, 2020, he's going to probably be like a $20 million pitcher, something the Indians do not have at the moment in terms of cost. So I think he's the most likely to go if they do decide to trade. I think the Dodgers would sort of certainly listen and be all in on that kind of thing. So it just, you know, who knows what it would take to get that done. But I think that they do have the pieces to do it. Like we mentioned all the outfield depth that at the moment, that means they don't have a spot for Alex Verdugo. And he's certainly someone who could fetch someone. And like, depending on what they do at catcher, like if they swing big and try to get JT Realmuto, it doesn't really matter that you have K-Bear Ruiz and Will Smith at the ready if they're not going to have a job in 2020. You might use one of those guys or both to trade for better players. So like this is sort of that line of thinking, and I think that's sort of where it plays in. But like I said, we talked about this, the Dodgers have their flexibility, gives them options. And so it doesn't have to be trading for a specific thing, but if something like, you know, strikes their fancy and is like a really good target, maybe it is the time for them to sort of make that move.
Well, to wrap up, I have a number here. Number of 40-man transactions that will occur between a week from today, the 10th, and let's say, I don't know, the 14th? Let's say the 13th. Let's say Monday through by 11:59 p.m. Pacific time on December 13th.
Yeah, so the winter meetings, technically start Monday. Everyone kind of gets their Sunday. I'm going this year. It's in Vegas. Craig Manami also is going. Going to have dual True Blue LA
representation.
Can I make a
breakfast recommendation for the two of you?
Oh, do it.
You should go to, now I'm forgetting its name. It's in the Venetian. Hold on. Venetian. Craig would know it. Breakfast. It's Thomas Keller's joint.
Okay.
Bouchon.
Nice. Okay.
Go to Bouchon and have breakfast, and you will thank me when you're back.
I will say I was blind to the Venetian breakfast option there.
There you go.
But yeah, so winter meetings will be there. So we get to last time. The only winter meetings I went to was 2014, and that was the first winter meetings for the new Dodgers front office under Friedman, and they had Farhan Zaidi at the time.
They hit the over.
Yeah, they made like a billion-y trades. So like that was fun. I don't know if it's going to be that, but it would be amazing if it is. So let's say so the number
I have a number. The number I have for you is 2.5.
Okay, and I take this to mean adding 2.5 players to the 40-man roster.
I'm saying. Right? Transactions.
Oh, total transactions. Okay. Yeah. So it could be a trade, could be a signing.
Yeah.
You know what? Just for fun, I'm leaning in. I'm going to take the over.
Okay. I thought 2.5 was a little aggressive, and I think it is.
But you know what? Let's go 3 or 4. Let's do it.
Okay.
And I'm counting. Oh, I'm counting Ryan LaVarnway because that's what happened. they traded Drew Butera last time.
This is why I went a little aggressive. I'm like, I'm expecting. I'm not talking about major. I'm anything. There's going to be at least one
involving
silly
the 40-man
trade, or one dumb trade, or one silly signing that technically affects the 40-man. So.
Yeah, or they claim someone who gets DFA'd to like the next 2 days, and then he gets added to the roster. And then they end up DFAing him 2 days later. That's two transactions. That's like it pays for itself right there.
So you'll take the over. I'll take the under with the caveat that there's then going to be three like that Friday or something.
Right, exactly. It'll be as soon as the clock strikes midnight Thursday night. Oh, dang, we just missed it.
Well, you did.
So,
I didn't. So.
Well, no, yeah. Look, you accurately predicted it. So
you're going to be going to Vegas. I'm actually going to be in Oregon during that entire week. So you and I are going to take next week off, bearing a really big deal, and then you and I will try to make it work. I'll call it. I am going to be on Mount Hood in Oregon, where I don't think they have telephones, so I may not be able to reach you. Maybe we'll Morse code you my pithy reactions. But if not, I'm back on Thursday, and hopefully you and I can get together and talk about it. Otherwise, we'll have our normal episode 2 weeks from today.
Absolutely. So if the Dodgers have like a starting catcher sometime between now and the next 2 weeks, then we will definitely do a different episode or a new episode of the podcast. I don't know.
Maybe. Depends on who the starting catcher is.
Right. Look, I'll say right now, if they sign Martin Maldonado as a free agent, we are not doing an emergency podcast. So other than that, we'll see you in 2 weeks or sooner.
Question mark?